that must be pulling on Neptune, causing it to stray somewhat from its otherwise predictable orbit around the Sun. While many people tried to calculate the orbit of the unknown planet, most notably Percival Lowell. And finally, the new planet was found on today's date in the year 1930 by Clyde Tombaugh of the Lowell Observatory outside Flagstaff. The planet was given the name Pluto for the mythological brother of Neptune, an appropriate name also since the first two letters are Percival Lowell's initials. But Pluto's discovery introduced more mysteries than it solved. For one thing, Pluto isn't a giant planet, as many people had predicted. Instead, it's extremely small, smaller than Earth's moon. Some astronomers used to speculate that Pluto was, in fact, an escaped moon of Neptune, until Pluto was found to have its own moon, discovered about a decade ago. What's more, Pluto is so small that it couldn't have caused the deviations in Neptune's orbit, which is what caused us to look for it in the first place. Today, some astronomers are still searching for another undiscovered planet, an unknown member of the Sun's family located beyond the orbit of Pluto. This is Stardate, and we're pleased to welcome two new Stardate stations, WUOT-FM, Knoxville, Tennessee, and WDTR-FM in Detroit, Michigan. Good to have you with us. Stardate and Stardate Magazine are productions of the McDonald Observatory at the University of Texas at Austin. And for the McDonald Observatory, I'm Joel Block.
And this is Brain Damage.
We now return to our recording already in progress.
What did you say?
We now return to our recording already in progress.
What did you say?
We now return to our recording already in progress.
What did you say?
We now return to our recording already in progress.
What did you say?
We now return to our recording already in...
The number you have reached has been changed. The new number has been disconnected.
Brain damage.
Möchten Sie etwas zu trinken haben?
Dies ist viel besser.
Can you say déjà vu?
We now return to our recording already in progress.
What did you say?
Can you say deja vu?
We now return to our recording already in progress.
What did you say?
Can you say deja vu?
Good evening, Vice President Nixon.
Good evening, Mr. Hall.
Welches sind die Regenbogenfarben?
If you do not push a key in 3 seconds, you will be disconnected.
Mein Bruder ist jünger als ich.
Something about the magical pulse of steel drums that just makes you want to get up and scream. Yeah, it's 11 minutes after 10 o'clock. The program is Brain Damage. We're here at the end of a really crazy, crazy, crazy week. Boy, so many fun things happened, and we'll be talking about every single one of them here on 90.1 FM, taking your phone calls at 632-6901. Oh, great music there. But enough of that. Let's, first of all, before we take off into phone calls and wonderful things like that, get a little bit serious and take a look at the news from Moscow.
This is your program, Moscow Mailbag. Once again, Joe Adamoff, to answer your questions. We start out with Dave Mosier of San Jose, California, who asks, what are the penalties for driving under the influence of alcohol in the USSR?
Well, I think the penalties are pretty severe. You're considered intoxicated even if you've had only a glass of beer. According to our laws, it does not matter how much alcohol there is in your blood, as long as there is some. Now, if caught for the first time, you're fined an equivalent of $170, or your driving license is rescinded from 1 to 3 years. The same penalties if you refuse to take a breathalyzer test. Now, if during a year after this you again drive while intoxicated, then I'm afraid you've had it. You may get a term of up to 1 year, or 25% of your salary is deducted for a year. Plus, your license, this time, is rescinded for 3 to 5 years. I remember some time back driving home from the radio. It was about 1:30 in the morning. I was stopped about a block from my house. There were several police cars there, and a sergeant asked for my license and the car registration. I told him I'd left both at home, in my other jacket. He called his superior and said, "Captain, this man has no documents." "Why have you no documents?" asked the captain. "Well, I told him why. Look, here's my Soviet television and radio card." I showed it to him. He looked me straight in the eye and said, "Typical car thief." I said, "This is not the first time, Captain." He got the giggles. Then he told me, "Go see the doctor in that minibus. That's where the breathalyzer is." Well, the doctor took one look at me and said, "What do you want?" "Nothing," I said. "I was told to come and see you. I'm a habitual alcoholic." "Look," he says, "it's late. It's time you were in bed, and so was I. Would you please go home?" And he wouldn't even let me blow into that instrument. All I can say is that both the cops and the doctors are good psychologists.
Dave's interested. Is this a widespread problem in the Soviet Union?
Alcoholism while driving, yes. I'm afraid it is. 1/3 of the deaths as a result of road accidents are caused by drunken driving. Another interesting detail, 2/3 of all the road accidents occur on rural roads. Maybe because they're not too good. I think that's the reason. And another interesting fact, our annual death toll on the roads is 45,000. Yours is 50 to 55,000. But mind you, you have approximately 12 times more cars.
Robert Miller of Kingwood, West Virginia. What are the salaries in the Soviet Union?
Well, there's such a thing as an average salary. It's about $340, your money. Of course, to you this may not seem much, but to understand the buying power of $340 here, you must take the following into consideration. And mind you, I'm not trying to beat around the bush. The maximum income tax is 13% of your earnings. Rent is about $25 a month. That's how much I pay for 3 rooms and a kitchen. Most city dwellers have access to a ramified system of public transport. Subways or buses are 7 cents a ride. Plus, our citizens enjoy free medical care, however good or bad, but it's free, and free education. We pay nothing towards our social security. It's all government finance. So you see, with husband and wife working, they can make it. But of course, I do know, I'm not denying this, that your average standard of living is higher, although we have some categories of workers that earn very much more than this.
How much does food cost, and how much does entertainment?
Well, let's see. Meat is approximately $1.55 a pound. Loaf of bread, 27 cents. Good leather shoes, about $70. Newspapers, 7 cents. Color TV set with a 25 to 30 inch screen, about $1,000. Which is a bit too much for you, I know. A pint of milk, 30 cents. One portion of ice cream, 35 cents. Dinner at a restaurant, around $12 or $13. Lunch at a cafeteria, $2 to $2.50. Vacation on the Black Sea for 24 days, about $204. Movies. The average is about 80 cents a ticket. A ticket to the opera or ballet, about $6. Well, I think that gives you an idea.
Steve Wagner of Oakland, California, is interested. Who's the young lady who reads the questions and ends the program by saying, "You couldn't do better than write us that letter"? How long has she been with the program?
Well, let me say, Steve, that we had another young lady reading the programs before. Olga, that's the girl reading your questions today, so let's ask her some questions. How long have you been with us, Olga?
I've been with the radio for 4 years now.
4 years, and on and off she's been reading questions on the bag. Where did you learn your English?
Well, I learned my English in the States. I was born there and spent there 8 years with my parents who worked at the United Nations.
You mean to tell me you were born in the States? I didn't know that. I mean, you are, according to American law, an American.
Well, I was considered an American for their laws.
You married?
Yeah, I married and have a 60-year-old daughter.
Good for you.
I've been listening to that program for a couple of years now on Radio Moscow, and I've never heard that lady ask any questions. I've never heard her say anything other than read the questions. That was quite amazing. Anyway, yes, we're now getting tapes from Radio Moscow. Isn't it incredible? They just send them right over to us here, and we're getting all kinds of tapes and letters and magazine articles from people who realize that WUSB is the place where they can hear this kind of thing. And boy, do we have a lot of things to hear tonight. Not only the steel drum music, but things from Radio Moscow, Moscow Mailbag. Let's also take a look at the Associated Press news. Let's see, three U.S. soldiers are recovering from their injuries following a bomb attack in Honduras. As the U.S. Embassy in the Central American country tells it, assailants hurled a bomb at the back of a bus that was carrying 28 U.S. soldiers to their base. One of the three injured soldiers remains hospitalized and also injured with two Honduran passers-by. Salman Rushdie. Is that a household word yet? Salman Rushdie. Does anyone know who he is? Okay, come on, everyone. We must know who he is. He pays some attention. Okay, he remains under the gun from Iran. But it didn't appear that way all day. The Islamic Republic state news agency says that the writer sentenced to death by Ayatollah Khomeini will be spared only if he repents for writing the satanic verses. The novel denounced by some Muslims as blasphemous. And it's also sold out all area bookstores. Believe me, I've been asking around to find out where that book is, and thought the best I could do was find some stores in the city that said they're going to try to get it again. But Barnes & Noble, Walton Books, and B. Dalton all have refused to carry the book. They're scared to carry the book because of the Ayatollah and his strong and harsh words. We'll be talking a bit more about that in the moments to come. The agency, the state news agency of the Islamic Republic, said that said earlier that an apology issued by the author would be enough, but it's now disclaiming that report. Still, the agency is also quoting an Iranian newspaper commentary as saying that to pay one man to kill another man is murder. Makes sense. Rushdie's quandary is spurring a rush on bookstores in this country. Dealers say the decision by large bookstore chains to stop displaying or selling the satanic verses has triggered a buying frenzy. In the words of one bookstore owner in Bloomington, Indiana, "Nobody bought it until they started hollering about it." Isn't it always the way? We'll get more into that a little bit later. A West German magazine is reporting that six U.S. fighter jets recently flew dangerously close to six passenger jets. According to Der Spiegel, the American planes came within yards of the airliners when they changed course without warning over Frankfurt Airport. The report comes 2 months after a U.S. Air Force plane crashed into a residential area of Remscheid, West Germany, killing the pilot and five people on the ground. President Bush is spending the weekend at Camp David. being briefed by Secretary of State James Baker on his recent tour of Western Europe. Following today's briefing, a spokesman said Bush is convinced that NATO unity is strong and East-West relations are proceeding on the basis of the West's agenda. Soviet human rights activist Andrei Sakharov and his wife Yelena Bonner have started their first joint trip to the United States. They've arrived in Boston for a visit with relatives. Sakharov visited the U.S. alone last fall in what was his first trip to the West. It turns out that more radiation than first believed was released from a uranium processing plant near Cincinnati over the past 38 years. You didn't hear that? I'll say it again. It turns out that more radiation than first believed was released from a uranium processing plant near Cincinnati over the past 38 years. The government has increased its estimate on the radiation release by one-third. Health questions have put the fernile plant under intense scrutiny by Congress, and hopefully any other plant. Convicted killer Anthony Bertolotti has missed his Saturday night date with the Florida electric chair. Anyone who's seen him, please remind him. He was scheduled to be executed tonight for the 1983 sex slaying of an Orlando woman, but that's now been reset for Tuesday morning while an appeals process continues. It's 24 minutes after 10 o'clock, minus 2 degrees Celsius, and that's, 28 Fahrenheit. We're expecting to be partly cloudy and cold tonight with a 30% chance of light snow or flurries toward morning, low 20 to 25. Sunday, a 30% chance of light snow or flurries in the morning, no accumulation. That really stinks. Otherwise, a mix of clouds and sun, cold, high in the mid-30s for Sunday night, partly cloudy and cold, low in the mid-20s. Monday, partly sunny and a little warmer, high in the mid-40s. Lousy winter so far. It's gone down a degree, minus 3 Celsius, 27 on the Fahrenheit scale. Well, the Soviets are out of Afghanistan. They packed their bags and left this week. And I don't know if you folks read the newspapers. I read some of them. I've got a couple of magazines, and I even got a copy of Time magazine this week, which I don't usually do. And something really rather odd and sad and touching and strange was the way they left the country. At precisely 10 o'clock, I believe this is what happened. This was written before it happened, but I believe it did take place. At precisely 10 o'clock on Wednesday morning, Lieutenant General Boris Gromov, the commanding officer of Soviet troops in Afghanistan, walked alone across the steel bridge into Termez, the final Soviet soldier to leave Afghanistan. And according to the daily newspaper Pravda, Gromov then delivered a short private speech that was not written down or listened to. And then he continued on his way without looking back. So strange. You'd expect that on a TV show, maybe, but, boy. Gives a speech and no one hears it. And no one writes it down. I wonder what it means. I wonder what he said. And, oh, dear. Oh, dear, oh, dear, oh, dear. Well, we have a bit of news in here. Just off the teletype. Oh, dear. Well, this ties in with something I was going to read. So, let's read this first, and then we'll look at what I was going to talk about anyway. Oh, marvelous. David Duke. Now, you know who David Duke is, I hope. David Duke, a former Ku Klux Klan Grand Wizard, squeaked out a narrow victory over home builder John Treen tonight in a race for a seat in the Louisiana legislature after a campaign peppered with charges of racism, with unofficial returns showing 35 of 35 precincts reporting. I'd say it's about 100% there. Duke has 8,456 votes. Treen has 8,232. This guy was elected by just over 200 votes? Oh, my God. Oh, that was something. Well, okay, a little background on this. This was in the New York Times on Monday the 13th. Kind of a opinion piece by this guy, Jason Berry, who wrote a memoir of civil rights politics in Mississippi called Amazing Grace. The chickens are coming home to roost for the Republican Party, just at the time when the GOP is trying to attract blacks at the national level. Its 20-year-old Southern strategy of playing to racist fears has produced a major embarrassment, David Duke. Mr. Duke, a former Grand Wizard of the Ku Klux Klan, recently emerged as the leading Republican contender in a primary for a Louisiana House seat. He led John Treen, a pillar of the Republican establishment, by nearly 15 percentage points. The general election was today. Mr. Duke's election to the legislature would be a disaster for Louisiana and a nightmare for the Republicans now that they are trying to appeal to blacks. At 38, he leads the National Association for the Advancement of White People, which has advocated geographic resettlement of ethnic groups. Under this plan, for example, all American Jews would have to live in Manhattan or Long Island, renamed West Israel. Oh, I love it. West Israel. Okay, great. Peel away his past, and David Duke, handsome with sandy hair and mustache, is an articulate white right-winger. Right-winger. White, too, but right. He opposes affirmative action, abortion, welfare, and a guaranteed share of minority contracts in public works. Eschewing overt racism, Mr. Duke has profited from reactions in his 99% white suburban district to almost any violence involving blacks. For example, he seems to draw strength from a recent series of murders of blacks by blacks in New Orleans. A member of the New Orleans Country Club was recently quoted by a Times Picayune columnist, Iris Kelso. "We need Duke now. We have to send a message to the blacks." But the Republican Party has been sending similar messages to blacks for years. In 1968, Richard Nixon aimed his Southern strategy at disaffected white Democrats. Neighborhood schools became a euphemism for white schools in segregated neighborhoods. Republican candidates avoided words like nigger, but pounded away at welfare, crime, busing, and gun control. These issues galvanized emotions, but the Republicans offered few remedies for systematic racism or poverty. In 1980, Ronald Reagan, former president of the United States, disavowed an endorsement from the Ku Klux Klan, but in his first administration, he sought tax breaks for segregated schools, yet feigned hurt when asked why blacks considered him racist. The Reagan administration also tried to substitute relish for vegetables in public school lunches, some message to inner cities. Urban programs were slashed, hitting the black poor particularly hard. In 1984, Mr. Reagan told one crowd, "The South will rise again," reviving Confederate emotions buried in historical memory. The 1988 Bush campaign stooped to shameless demagoguery. I love that word. In running a television advertisement about the black rapist Willie Horton. Such messages burrow into the popular consciousness, feeding fears. Simply put, Republican strategy has made racism politically fashionable, and it seems to have worked in gaining white votes in recent presidential elections. But it also runs flat against the purported new Republican strategy announced by Lee Atwater, chairman of the Republican National Committee. As an undergraduate at Louisiana State University, David Duke was known as the Nazi of LSU. In 1970, he wore stormtrooper gear, protesting a speech by the radical attorney William Kunstler with a sign reading, "Gas the Chicago Seven," a reference to Mr. Kunstler's clients. "Hitler is a Duke hero." And there's also a picture of him here walking around saying, carrying a sign saying, "Kunstler is a communist Jew." David Duke is on a quest for acceptability at a time when bigotry is mounting. Buildings at Smith College in Northampton, Massachusetts have been defaced with racist slogans. A California talk show, Race and Reason, whose host is another ex-Klan leader, Tom Metzger, reaches a dozen states on cable access channels. Some 1,500 incidents of unprovoked assaults by Nazi skinheads have been reported. Yet, when was the last time a president spoke during prime time about racism and put his moral weight behind the politics of healing? The chairman of Louisiana's Republican Party, William Nungesser, criticizes David Duke's opportunistic character. Mr. Duke switched party registration for the race. A local television station, WDSU, reported he took an apartment in the district shortly before the race. This could disqualify him since state election law requires a year's residency in a district. If elected, Mr. Duke will no doubt use the legislature to advance his racist agenda. But there's a reason why David Duke became a Republican and fights for the soul of the Republican Party in Louisiana. For 20 years, the Southern strategy invited it. And to repeat the news bulletin we just received a little while ago, David Duke, a former Ku Klux Klan Grand Wizard, squeaked out a narrow victory over home builder John Treen tonight in a race for a seat in the Louisiana legislature after a campaign peppered with charges of racism, with unofficial returns showing 35 of 35 precincts reporting. Duke has 8,456 votes. Treen has 8,232. And Time Magazine described it this way. This was, of course, before tonight's news. David Duke claims to have abdicated the title of Imperial Wizard of the Knights of the Ku Klux Klan. Now he wants a new one, Louisiana State Legislator. Last month, Duke, 38 years old, finished first with 33% of the vote in a nonpartisan election for representative from Metairie, I guess that's how you pronounce that, a white suburb of New Orleans. In a runoff this week, he faces runner-up John Treen, 63, a local builder and the brother of former Governor David Treen. Duke denies he is a racist and says coyly that he supports civil rights for all people. Duke, who says he heads an outfit called the National Association for the Advancement of White People, still has the same address and phone number as the local Ku Klux Klan headquarters. That's simply fascinating. Amazing. And, well, he did win tonight, didn't he? Oh, shucks, folks. I guess it's only fair. I mean, you know, you disagree with somebody, no matter what your views, it's only right to call them up to say congratulations, don't you think? Sure. Not if the line sounds like that, though. Well, you know, I guess that's... You could expect that. I mean, probably the biggest night of his life. Winning a... wait, did he win the election? Hold on a second. Did he win the election or did he win... Looks like he won the election, not just the Republican seat. A race for a seat in the Louisiana legislature. So, got yourselves a Klansman for a state legislature in Louisiana now. We'll try to get through to him a little later. See just what kind of racist things he's planning. And what else? Of course, we have news on the book, of course. Satanic Verses. Sales rise as two more book chains stop sales. And Ayatollah Khomeini is after him with a passion. Now, we decided earlier tonight to try and find out some information that might be of help to those of you that are pursuing the reward. $1 million will go to any foreigner, and I guess, you know, we're all foreigners here because we're in the United States. Iranians, people inside Iran probably would get more money for it, but if one of us listening, one of us here at the radio station, managed to find the author of the book, whose name is Salman Rushdie, so that's a clue right there. If you find him and you kill him, you are eligible to receive $1 million from the Iranian government. Now, we were trying to find out before how we would go about collecting such money, and also, unfortunately, the U.S. offices were closed today, but we did want to find out just what we would be required to do as far as reporting that income and whether or not they would hold a grudge over the way we got the money, that kind of thing. You know, it's important not just for the sake of the people asking the questions, but for the sake of all those listening, that we not just listen to these fly-by-night schemes. You know, you have to kind of look at the offers as they're made, examine them, and make sure you're not being caught up in something that may not actually pay off. So we did try to get a hold of some Iranian people, but unfortunately, Iranian officials, that is, because as far as I'm concerned, this has nothing to do with the Iranian people. This is strictly an Iranian government type thing. Now, unfortunately, the Iranian government really isn't around the United States all that much. not exactly on the friendliest of terms, so I had to look elsewhere for Iranian officials, and the thing about Iranian officials, they don't usually speak English. They usually speak other languages. However, I had a stroke of genius and decided to get a hold of an English-speaking country where it was another day, mainly tomorrow in the daytime, when they would be awake and up and about and speaking English. So here's what happened.
Hey, three, what city, please?
They're on the line.
Hi, is this Auckland?
Yes.
I need the number for the Iranian embassy in Auckland, please.
Iranian?
Yes.
One moment.
And, of course, Auckland is in New Zealand, but you knew that.
We had no listing for the Iranian embassy, I'm sorry.
Okay, is that the capital city?
You want Wellington.
Wellington. Do you handle Wellington?
Yeah, I think you want the one in Wellington.
Okay, you don't handle Wellington, then.
I'll put you through to Wellington directory.
Thank you.
Hey, dear.
Hi, Wellington.
I'll try them again for you, sir. Hang on.
Okay, thank you.
Calling from?
I'm calling from the United States.
Hang on a minute. I think you had to put the call through yourself, sir. I couldn't transfer it through.
I wouldn't transfer?
I couldn't transfer it through. Can you ring Wellington at all?
Well, I can just ring my local operator again, I guess.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Interesting accent, those New Zealanders.
Can I help you?
Hi, I need
over.
Whoa. That operator sounded drunk. Let's take a listen to that.
Can I?
AT&T, can I help you?
Hi, I need. That's a drunk operator if I ever heard one. I need to hear this one more time. No music, please.
AT&T, can I help you?
Hi, I need overseas information.
That's disgusting.
New Zealand, please.
New Zealand?
Yes.
New Zealand. So why New Zealand?
Wellington.
Wellington, thank you. Hold on, please.
Thank you.
Connect you with information. If you need a call, just proceed up and down and I'll come back on the line.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Hello, Wellington?
Yeah.
I'm looking for the number for the Iranian embassy.
One moment.
Thank you. Looking for the Iranian embassy in New Zealand, where they speak English with a strange accent. We'll be opening up our phone lines for you very soon. 632-6901, area code 516. We have, it's like three open lines now, so rush in and get them if you want them. 632-6901. One line left. Better hurry. 632-6901.
Hello, sir.
Yes.
Were you referred to us from Auckland?
Yes, I was.
Yeah, unfortunately, they are building an Iranian embassy here, but at the moment they only have a listing under the actual ambassador or whatever his name, and it's a confidential listing.
Oh, it's unlisted, you mean?
Yeah, well, they haven't actually built the embassy yet here, and so the actual diplomat for Iran here has his name listed confidentially. So, we don't have the number to give you.
I see. Do you have any kind of Iranian consulate or anything like that?
No, I don't think so. Just one moment. I think the nearest one is Canberra, Australia. Just a moment.
Okay, thank you.
Referred you to us? Was it Auckland Directory or Auckland Consulate there?
I'm sorry?
Who was it that actually referred you to us?
I spoke to Auckland Directory before. They referred me to you.
Auckland Directory, thank you. Yes, the nearest one to us is in Canberra, Australia. Do you want their number?
Sure, thank you.
It's phone Canberra
952243. 6. Okay, I don't need the telex number, but that's the listing you have then.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you very much.
Okay.
And now listen to what happened when we tried calling the Iranian embassy in Canberra, Australia.
The Republic of Iran is closed at the moment. The office hours are from 8:30 to 1 p.m. and from 2 to 4:30 p.m. Monday to Friday. Please leave your message no longer than 30 seconds after you hear the sound of the beep.
Well, I left a message asking just how I would go about claiming the $1 million and who I would speak to, who's in charge of that kind of thing, and they should be getting back to us real soon. Interesting, though. The Islamic Republic of Iran is closed. That's how he said it on the message there. Australian accent. I wonder if he was Iranian. Anyway, that's part of the craziness that's been going on this week. Rewards for authors. What's your opinion on that? Do you think it's fair that somebody writing a book should be considered a criminal? Or is it the old censorship routine again with a different cast of characters? Our number is 632-6901. Why don't you give us a call now? But right before we go to you, let's see if David Duke is still on the phone. The Ku Klux Klan's racist pig that just got elected. He's still talking. If he knows what's good for him, he has his phone off the hook. 632-6901. Program is Brain Damage, and in case you're curious about what kind of music we've been having, underneath us here, it's Our Boys Steel Orchestra, a brand new record we just got, Pan Night and Day. And I've had just about enough of it. 632-6901. Good evening. You're on Brain Damage.
Oh, yeah, caller. This is the ghost of Sebastian Cabot.
Uh-huh. Why are you calling me?
Because I want the student union.
Okay, big deal. So does half a million other people. What can I do for you?
Yes, Lister, I would like him off the air.
Okay, anything else we can do for you?
Oh, yes, ban Mr. Radio.
Consider it done, and all those like him. 632-6901, good evening, you're on Brain Damage.
I got a load of radio. Here he is, everybody, all those fans out there, live from Long Island. Here he is, Big Jim Doomsayer.
Yes, and I must say, you sent in a picture, which was very nice.
Oh.
A Brain Damage picture. That's the kind of thing we like to see from our listeners.
That's fan mail.
Fan mail, yes. Fan mail is always nice to get.
Look that under fan mail.
Uh-huh.
Oh, here we are. Yay for Duke. Yippee.
You can't be serious. I hope you're not serious.
Duke, only one that I have ever heard of who has spoken out against illegitimate welfare children. He wants to put a stop to it. Yay, Duke.
Yeah, he wants to put a stop to their oxygen supply. Come on, this guy belongs to a murderous organization.
But nobody had the guts ever, I'm breaking things, to speak out against illegitimate welfare children that our tax dollars are funding. And he had the guts to say something about it. Yay, Duke.
He had the guts to say something about it?
He wants to try and do something about it. I don't know what he's going to
do. I suppose you're going to say Ayatollah had guts to actually say, go out and kill this author person.
Oh, we got to go to this allegorical novel now that everybody's talking about. I can't believe that WUSB has jumped on the media bandwagon with the rest of the sensational clowns.
Well, I mean, you have to admit, it's a rather interesting story. It's not every day you hear something like this, where millions of Muslims are committed to killing this one person because of something he wrote.
But that, you know, if anybody calls up about this novel tonight, I don't want to take up too much time so that you can get to other callers, but I really don't know anything about the Muslim religion. I know that in Iran, they're total fanatics. You know, so I can't make any statements about this at all.
Well, I'd say fanaticism runs rampant in various parts of the world. I don't think you could condemn the whole religion, though. I think the Muslim religion is better than this.
It's sort of like a paradox, I guess.
No, it's like judging Christianity because of what some Bible Belt people do.
Yeah, well, I can't make any comment because I know nothing of the religion. All I know is from what I read in the papers. And I have no, you know, I have no background. I can't make no statements on that.
Well, that doesn't mean you can't offer an opinion.
Well, all you can say is that they're total fanatics. It's total. You know what? When I listen to your program, you know, you always pick up little bits and pieces of what people say, and you remember some things and you forget others. And I remember something somebody said on your program. And I like that. I added that to my repertoire of things to keep in my memory.
What was it?
Said that people take what's said to them without thinking about it.
Uh-huh.
It reminded me of what I saw on television when I saw the Iranians. How the fanatics about kill this guy and the evil empire of the United States. They're all standing there. Somebody fed them all this knowledge. And are any of them really stopping to think? You know what they're doing.
Well, I would say there's probably a few people in there that are thinking, but you got to keep quiet in a situation like that.
Well, that's what that guy was saying on your radio program once. He said people even Christianity or anything, it's fed to them, and nobody really thinks about, well, where did this come from? Where did these scriptures come from? You know, what's behind this? What's the myth? You know. You got to think. A lot of people don't think. They just take what's said to them. That's good. And I think that's what...
That's good?
It's not good.
Oh, it's not good.
I'm glad I picked up what that listener said on the radio. Well, I guess that was about 2 weeks ago.
Uh-huh.
And I also noticed that I can't use metaphors on your program because people don't understand what I said.
Well, I don't know if that's necessarily true. There's always some people that won't understand what you're saying, like me, but most of our listeners will get it.
Well, when I just said one thing, and I couldn't believe the responses that I was hearing over the phone when I said forest for the trees.
Uh-huh.
When I speak of overpopulation a lot, and I said that the problems of people can't see the forest for the trees, I didn't mean that we're overdeveloping. What I was saying is the problems, they don't... The real problem is overpopulation, and you're not going to stop it. You're not going to stop the problems that it's causing. I can't see the forest for the trees. The reason for the problems is overpopulation, but they don't see that. They don't see why things are getting overdeveloped. Forest for the trees was a metaphor that I used.
Well, I think most people got that.
But well, one guy said, well, people don't want to develop out at the East End. We do see the forest. But the thing is, somebody said something about mega-tropolis or mega-slot, lopsidedness or something. I don't know what he said. Even if we could group together into a mega-tropolis or whatever he said, there's people in this world who think that we should develop. We should develop, and we should just keep on developing. None of this stuff is important. So, really, there's no way out. We painted ourselves into a corner, but I don't want to go into that. We've got to give other calls a chance tonight. I want to hear what other people have to say about that Iranian thing, even though I feel that nobody really has a right unless they know that religion.
Tell me something. If you had the chance to write the sequel to Satanic Verses, and
how could I? I know nothing about the Muslim religion except what I've read in the paper.
Well, let's say you did. Let's say you had the knowledge in your head.
Mm-hmm.
What would you do now if you knew you could put out a good book that might infuriate some people? Would you just sit on it, or would you take the chance like this guy did? First of all, do you think he knew that he was going to
I infuriate people already when I talk about abortion. Because I would carry... I think that people are crazy that are against abortion. You know, they might as well stop me from masturbating. Can I say that over the air?
Well, you can say that, but it's not something we want to get into. Uh-huh. Well,
now, guys, I'm doing that because we're aborting kids. You know, some people would say, now that's totally crazy.
Well, you can say what you want about anti-abortionists, but I don't think the frenzy has quite reached this stage yet.
What, like this book?
Muslim crowds and all that kind of thing.
You mean what about people pulling up abortion centers? I mean, that's total hypocrite. They don't want to hurt anybody, yet they're blowing up abortion centers. Now that's crazy.
That is crazy. No doubt about it.
Oh, well, we don't want to kill anybody. We don't want to kill an innocent baby that hasn't been born. That's the way they look at it. I look at it as multicellular thing.
But you don't have mass murders and
pull up abortion centers. They're nuts. You know, to me, if we're going to get into abortion, you're going to have people calling about abortion tonight. I shouldn't have brought this up.
No, don't bring that up anymore.
Yeah, because you're going to have about 10,000 callers now, right to life.
The question I'm asking is it right for places like Barnes & Noble and B. Dalton and Walden Books to stop carrying this book simply because of threats against them?
That they should carry it because you know that this country is based on freedom of the press, which is very good. I think it's gone a little bit too far, but there's really nothing you can do about it.
Uh-huh.
As far as Channel 13 and 21, they have a series on the CIA, and I've watched that, and I think a lot of the stuff they're saying on the air is compromising the security of this country, personally. I think they're saying too much.
Uh-huh.
They're saying, I don't know if you've watched that series.
I haven't seen it, no, but I've heard about it. In a democracy, though, it's always going to be kind of a tightrope you're walking.
Even the Oliver North stuff, I think that stuff should be kept, you know, out of the press. But what are you going to do? This is freedom of the press. But I think that stuff is compromising the security of this nation, personally. I think that freedom of the press has gone too far. But what is too far? Like you say on the air, you can't draw the line. You can't, because then you're going to... Because like the people that are against Penthouse and Playboy, where do you draw the line? Do they wear panties? Do they do this? What can you do? What pornography? What is pornographic? It goes on forever, so you can't draw the line. So if I could write a book like that, sure I would. You know, but I might be a martyr, you know. I might die. This guy could have died for it. You know, I look up to this guy.
Well, he still could. I don't see how he can live out the rest of his life. There's literally millions of people that take the word of Khomeini as gospel, as law. And for him to say something like this...
He's a total fanatic. I can't... You know, it's hard for me to believe what I see on the television sometimes. It's hard for me to believe that people are standing there. I think that a lot of them are standing there just like when Hitler was in power. They're afraid to say anything. They're just going along with the crowd, just like when you were a kid, maybe not you in particular, but like when you and everybody was passing a joint around and you said you didn't want to say no because you wanted to be part of the group. I think a lot of those people are in the same situation. Don't you?
Yeah, you can pass out, you know, you can pass out an Algernon on just about anything, not just joints, cigarettes, drinking, listening to Bay City Rollers,
or
whatever.
To be an individual, just like this station. It's hard to listen to this station. A lot of people say, what's that crap? You know, because their minds are closed.
Yeah, you have to get into fistfights all the time when you listen to USB because you have to defend your choice.
Well, you don't have to go, you know.
You can tell USB listeners. They always have black eyes.
Always have black eyes.
They do.
But you said
black eyes but good ears.
That you had trouble once because you joked with somebody and you had the scars to prove it. I don't know if you were kidding around or whether you really had problems.
Well, I don't remember saying it, so I must have been kidding.
Yeah, but I got to say that I look up to you. You know, even though I'm pushed your arm, I look up to you you did protest that, huh? You see, that's what I like about you. At least you do something. A lot of people complain. It doesn't cost anything to complain, but at least you're out there.
Well, I got a secret for you. It doesn't cost much to do something either.
Well, it costs you your time to go there and do that.
Yeah, well, what's my time worth? What's anyone's time worth, you know? We're given, 80 years on this planet? There's a lot of time to mess around with. You only waste your time if you do the same thing over and over.
Hmm.
If you spice it up a bit, then you haven't wasted your time.
Yeah.
You know, and it's funny because people think, you know, you're wasting your time when you do something different, and that's as opposite as you can possibly get.
Yeah.
Anyway, well, thanks for calling, and
you're doing something, Eric. You're doing something with your time, something constructive, I think, even though I don't agree with everything you say.
Uh-huh. Well, you're never going to agree with everybody.
That's true.
All the time. I think Lincoln said something like that.
As far as that question goes, before I go, I would, if I thought it was going to cause an uproar, I would still write the book. Don't some of the things I say to people cause an uproar?
Well, then think of the things that you can do that will cause an uproar and do them anyway.
People think I'm crazy. They don't see the world is overpopulated. They don't see what they're doing. They don't realize what would happen if fossil fuels suddenly started becoming depleted. They'd starve to death. Your food is grown by fossil fuels. The pesticides is made from it, and they're cultivated from fossil fuels. It's just, we're so dependent on that, and there's so many, we paint ourselves into a corner. People think I'm crazy when I talk about it, maybe because I come across as a fanatic. You got to watch who you talk to about this kind of thing.
Well,
very sensitive subject.
There's no need to repeat yourself. That's
yeah.
That's when people start thinking you're crazy, when you keep repeating yourself. Not that you do that, but
I do it on this program because it's brain damage. But
yeah.
You got to watch. You know, you got to be in an educated. You got to be among educated people to talk about that subject because the layman, you know, they say, well, look, there's plenty of woods, there's plenty of this, there's plenty of that, but they don't realize that all of those areas are directly affected now from pollution and everything else, that there's no place is immune anymore.
Okay, well, thanks for calling.
Yeah, I'll see you. I'll be listening.
Okay. 632-6901, and we've got quite a few open lines. What happened? We got preempted 1 week by a basketball game. Will we lose all of our listeners? I'm kind of curious about this. Have our listeners been weeded out by some horrible force out there? I know, there's rumors going about, right? If you listen to this program, Islamic mobs will get mad at you and hunt you down to all corners of the earth. Well, those rumors have been greatly exaggerated. One or two Klansmen, maybe, but Islamic mobs, they have difficulty gaining access to Long Island. Well, actually, they get lost quite a bit. It's a horrible place to try to find somebody. Our number is 632-6901. Come on, fill up these lines, folks. Area code 516-632-6901. It almost makes me think that people aren't interested in what's going on in the world. I mean, this was a crazy week. You know, the way I think about this whole book deal, think about all the religions in the world. Think about Christianity. Think about Judaism. Now, has there ever been a book, ever, published that said something, what a Christian might consider blasphemous, what a Jew might consider blasphemous? Have there ever been books like that sold in B. Dalton's and Walden's and Barnes & Noble? I think so. So why in hell are books that are quote-unquote blasphemous against the Muslim religion, why are they banned? This sends out a rather strange message. Is that religion more sacred than any other religion? I happen to think no religion is sacred. I happen to think nothing is sacred. Nothing is above criticism. In Japan, over the last few weeks, before the emperor died, if you went around saying, even mentioning the fact that the emperor could die, that was cause for someone to get very, very upset with you. Perhaps suggest that you lose some weight in a particular part of your body. Those kind of attitudes are something that I think holds the human race down, like so many weights. 632-6901. Let's hear what you think. Good evening. You're on Brain Damage. All right. 632-6901. Good evening. You're on Brain Damage.
Hi, it's Andrew Goldberger.
Hello. How are you?
Pretty good. Now, I know you usually hang up on, like, prank phone calls, but this isn't a prank, okay?
No, it sounds like you.
No, but listen, me and my friend Mr. X.
Mr. X?
Yes, we made this tape, and it's all about brain damage, and it promotes it. So I'd like, can you just play it, please?
No, you have to play it.
Oh, I know, but can you listen to it?
Okay, go ahead. Doesn't really have anything to do with what we're talking about, but go ahead.
Does, but it provokes brain damage. Here it goes.
Can I accept a little blasphemy of my own?
$1 million would go to anyone that watches Hello Kitty for 5 hours straight without barfing.
Information. If you need a call, just proceed up and down, and I'll come back in a while.
This is real brain damage! 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 AT&T Psychic Ward, may I help you?
What's that?
My elevator music!
Isn't it cool?
You just made that tape tonight, didn't you?
Yeah.
That's quite interesting. You work fast.
Yeah.
Do you have a name for that?
It's called Brain Damage. It's bad elevator music.
Uh-huh. Well, we don't have any elevator music, unfortunately, but...
But that thing, don't.
It's good. Good. Needs a little work, but, polish it up a bit, and I think you got something there.
All right. We'll combine it with next week.
Okay. Just send me the residuals, that's all.
Cool. Bye.
Bye. 632-6901. Good evening. You're on Brain Damage.
Oh.
Yeah?
My voice is a little out this week.
Sorry?
Sorry, my voice is a little out this week.
Where's your voice out to?
Out to, I don't know, out to Islam, perhaps. Out to Muhammad.
Look, okay, let's make a requirement here.
Okay.
Everybody that calls in has to say something, has to make some sarcastic remark about Islam, just to show that we support democracy. And if you want, you can make a sarcastic, remark about Judaism and Christianity, too, and any other religion you feel, Klingons, I don't care. Just, nobody's better than anybody else, and I'm not too crazy about that kind of attitude.
What? Did I say something critical already?
No, not you. I'm talking about the mobs and swarms of people that want to kill somebody.
Oh, that is so stupid. I mean, I really do hate that. You know, anytime anything controversial ever comes around, there are these closed-minded ignots who try to ban it. Like, the same thing happened with, generally, get out, goodbye.
Get out of there, come on.
Hello. Yes, I am. Jen, my sister just came to him. Anyway, no, there's these whole bunch of ignots who really can't
connect
anything different that try to come in. I mean, they come in and try to censor other people from seeing what they don't believe in. I mean, the same thing happened with Last Temptation of Christ, and the reason, Jen, turn it down, you get feedback. The reason why they're taking off the shelf now is because the Islamic people happen to be a little bit on the violent side.
Uh-huh. Well, it incites people to war and things like that. I don't know why they want to keep inciting these poor people. I think I've been incited quite enough over the last decade or so. It's the same thing with censorship that you see in this country, too. Most times the people that want to do the censoring haven't even read the material. So they don't know what they're talking about. It's estimated that the vast majority of people involved here have not read the book at all. They don't even know what's in it. They just know that, they got to get this person for something. So it's the same, it's the same ignorance in a different culture.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. I mean, not fair, but, that's what you have to put up with to be human. I guess if there weren't people like that, there wouldn't be people like us either to counter that with there.
Well, I just hope the people like us, and I don't like being part of a group like that, but the people like us are able to stand up a little bit to this kind of, there's no worse terrorism than terrorism of the mind.
Although, to tell the truth, this is probably the best marketing thing they could possibly wish
for. Well, how good can the marketing be if the bookstores are refusing to carry the book?
They're not refusing to carry the book, they're refusing to put it out on the shelves.
That's not what I heard. I heard Barnes & Noble and Walden's and B. Dalton's are not carrying the book anymore.
I heard that they were giving it on a request.
Oh, let's see. I got a newspaper article here from today's New York Times. B. Dalton and Barnes & Noble chains, which have more than 1,250 stores in the United States, have said they would no longer sell the book. Now, maybe they'll allow you to go in the back room and steal it. I don't know. But I don't think that you're going to be able to get it there. I did call a store in the Village, though, in New York City, and they, one of those small bookshops, and they said quite vehemently, we will carry that book as soon as we can get our hands on it. We're not going to stop selling it.
Uh-huh.
And it's good to hear people talk like that, because it's only a book. For God's sake, it's only a book. Some person sat down and wrote something on a piece of paper. For that, you want to kill him? You know? I mean, these are words. How bad can words be? Actions, that's what you got to pay for. But merely words? You know, what if it was fiction?
It is fiction, actually.
Well, what if it was complete fiction? What if he was just saying, supposing this, you know? Is he not allowed to do that?
According to the Muslims, I guess not.
Well, I don't know. Some things I won't understand. For one thing, he's not even a Muslim, so I don't think he should have to pay in that way. You know, maybe if he understood the culture a little better and was a part of that culture himself, he wouldn't do something like this. But not being a part of that culture, I don't think he has to answer to it.
Oh, well. C'est la vie.
Yeah, that's my feeling on it. Well, look, you rest your voice. Sounds terrible.
Thank you very much.
Okay. 632-6901. Good evening. You're on Brain Damage.
Baker's.
632-6901. Good evening. You're on Brain Damage.
Hello there. I think you made your point well when you said it's just a book.
Uh-huh.
How could people really just pull it off the shelves if it's just a book? It's only worth, like, the paper it's printed on. And I think it's not showing much guts from the company of the people who run the company of the bookstores to actually pull it off.
Yeah, well, I can understand their fear. Because they are receiving threats themselves, they're receiving bomb threats, they fear for the lives of their employees. But still, you know, where do you draw the line? What if somebody decided they don't like, pogo compilations or something?
Yeah, that's just it. Like, what if some, like, Santana group decided they're going to blow up every place that sells Bibles? Do you think they're just going to pull Bibles off?
I don't know. It'd be an interesting experiment, wouldn't it?
Yeah, that's just it, though. How far can you take this? This shows it's been taken too far.
Uh-huh. Well, the reason this is happening is because unfortunately, the Islamic faith appears to have established itself as rather enthusiastic. Perhaps that's a good word for it. And I think now is the time for the more level-headed people in this particular part of the world, of the region, of this kind of religion, that they stand forward and say, this is wrong, we don't agree with this. You need something like that at this point.
Yeah, but that's not going to happen the way the movement's working right now.
No.
That doesn't say much for the religion, for people looking at it from an outside point of view.
Right, but I think the religion is better than that, you know? I think the Islamic religion...
Yeah, it is better than that, but people are not going to view it with that when there are that many people willing to listen to the word of one man to kill somebody.
Uh-huh. That's one thing that has to change, obviously. Fanaticism, I mean, you know, you could say, are the German people horrible people? No, they're not. But back in the 1930s, they certainly were. You know, something happened. Something infected them. And I think maybe that's the same thing that's happening here. I say maybe. You know, I'm not sure. I don't know all the facts here. But it certainly seems like this fanaticism is getting out of hand.
Yeah, it is, but I don't think that this should have any effect, like, here in the United States with people just wanting to sell the book. I mean,
I don't know. I just find something extremely wrong with that.
No, it shouldn't have any effect here. It should not. I mean, I could understand the book being banned in Islamic republics. Okay, I have no trouble there. But this, you know, the rules are different here. We should at least be allowed to read something, you know, that that is interesting, has proven itself to be interesting without living in fear.
But that's just it. It might not be interesting.
It might not be. From what I've heard, the book really doesn't say all that much anyway. So it might just be a scapegoat or something.
Yeah.
Anyway, what part of the country are you calling from?
Selden.
Selden. Oh, beautiful town there.
Yeah, not too far away.
Okay. Well, thanks very much for calling.
All right, you're welcome.
632-6901, area code 516. Good evening. You're on Brain Damage.
Hello, Eric.
Hi, how are you?
Okay, it's Bill Fox.
The Bill Fox?
The Bill Fox.
The Bill
so
Fox
guilty.
Of Stony Brook Campus.
Oh, yeah.
Wow. Oh, that's amazing. And what brings you to call us tonight?
Well, first question. Now, did you say that you couldn't say anything sarcastic about the Islamic religion, or you had to?
Well, I think everybody should say something sarcastic at this point. I mean, you know, you gotta get a sense of humor back into every aspect of life. You know, once you lose your sense of humor, you become a dangerous person, I think.
This is true.
And, you know, if you know people of this faith, you know, try to get them to loosen up a bit. This is kind of nuts.
Okay, well, I did have an observation. It's not terribly sarcastic. It's just an interesting observation. Have you ever noticed how the Quran is structured?
No, I haven't.
It's organized in such a way that, in size order, just the length of the various surah are, the longest surah come first and the shortest surahs come last without any chronological order.
Yeah.
And I just thought that was interesting.
Well, why is that?
I don't know. I can't figure it out myself. Mm-hmm. I guess, you know, somebody decided to put it together, and that seemed like a good way to do it. I have no idea. I figure there's probably a practical reason for it. Very often in religious traditions, things that are done for very practical reasons, and people read all these metaphysical understandings into that. Anyway,
tell me something, Bill. Do you think anything is above criticism? Anything?
No.
Nothing at all?
Nothing.
Not even me? Not even this radio station? Not even the State University at Stony Brook? Not even...
Oh, particularly not the State University at Stony Brook.
Not the government of the United States? Not Frosty the Snowman? Not the Atlantic Ocean? Not the New York Mets? Not God? Not buses? Nothing? Nothing is above criticism?
Nothing is above criticism.
Well, Bill, you know, if more people thought the way you did, I think there'd be less trouble in this world.
Probably, I don't know.
A lot less trouble.
Anyway, a couple of things. Firstly,
okay.
Ayatollah Khomeini is a Shiite, and most of his followers are generally just Shiite, not the other major, probably larger sect of Islam, which is Sunni.
Right.
So we're not talking about all, probably not talking about all Muslims.
Okay,
here.
Very good point there. Very good point.
Talking about Shiites.
We do tend to get caught up in generalizations here.
This is true.
And if I was saying Muslims agree with one thing, it's not right. That's not what this is all about. There's many different sects of Muslims, and they don't all agree.
This is true. And this is true to a larger degree, of course, in Christianity, and to a smaller degree in Judaism, but also elsewhere. It's not an uncommon type of phenomena. In any case, there was a theologian, well, there still is a theologian, Thomas J.J. Altizer, who about 20, 25 years ago wrote The Gospel of Christian Atheism. At that time, he was teaching at Emory University in Georgia. And Georgians didn't really find that terribly amusing. And eventually, though I don't think anybody actually put a bounty out for his head, he found it healthy to leave Georgia, and he actually came up here, and for the past 20, 25 years has been teaching up here at Stony Brook.
At Stony Brook. Well, that's interesting. I'm sure he has some thoughts on this whole matter.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Uh-huh. Okay, any other comments or insights?
Not right now.
Okay, well, thanks for calling.
I just thought I'd share that.
Great. Thanks very much. 632-6901. And it's 16 minutes after 11 o'clock. Listening to Brain Damage on WUSB in Stony Brook. Eric Corley with you up until midnight. Good evening. You're on Brain Damage.
Hello, this is Mark Olberger. I want to sing a song.
Well, okay. Go ahead.
How we do the lady moi hua. How we do me lady moi hua.
Why me?
Then fun me man jia.
See if I can make this kid laugh.
Shy yo bye.
Giggle, come on, giggle, kid. Giggle. Say something funny.
Yo.
There we go. Lose control.
So gave
people falling on banana peels. Oh, why me? 632-6901. Good evening, you're on Brain Damage.
So cute.
Yeah, 632-6901. Good evening, you're on Brain Damage.
Hello, Eric?
Yeah?
Yes, Salman Rushdie must die.
Uh-huh, why do you say something like that?
Because he has written a very, very evil book.
Uh-huh, do you really think so?
A book which tramples the prophet in the dust.
Well, at the risk of being trampled into the dust myself, what is wrong with that?
It is an insult to the prophet and to the faith of Islam.
Yes, but if you don't believe in the faith of Islam to start with, what does that have to do with anything?
But it is an insult to other people.
It is an insult, but lots of things are insults to other people. Look, we've been taking insults for many centuries here. We've learned to live with them.
Why should they do this now?
Why should they print a book? They've been printing books for ages. It's nothing new. I think I derailed his argument there. Okay, 632-6901. Good evening. You're on Brain Damage.
Good evening. How you doing? My name's Pete.
Hi, Pete.
And I'm from Setauket.
Setauket. Great.
Okay, how you doing?
Okay, how are you?
I believe these people, though, that own these stores, well, they're quite hypocritical, if you ask me.
You mean B. Dalton and Barnes & Noble?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Because you think about it, they can print books like stuff on witchcraft, the Satanic Bible and stuff. You know, you see those things. Say if you follow a Catholic religion or what's name some sort of Christianity, you get you see stuff like that. That's against. Let me say, for example, I'm Catholic. I'd say take that sometimes as a be quite honest with you, it's more to the effect that it's,
sacrilege.
It's like pornography.
Sacrilege, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. That's the point we were making before. Is any one religion above any other? Just because one religion is more violent than another, does that mean it has to be listened to more?
Well, no, not really. Because I feel that these Shiite Muslims, they're very tight-knit. You know, they supposedly pray five times a day constantly. They feel if there's a certain time of year when they make the pilgrimage to Mecca,
uh-huh.
they feel that if you die along your path but going to Mecca, that is you go straight to heaven instead of like waiting for some sort of judgment day.
Right, and that's what Khomeini has said, that anyone that kills this author will go straight to heaven without passing go, without any of that.
But who is Khomeini to say that?
Well, apparently a lot of people believe that he knows the ropes here. Usually I preach tolerance for all religions, but there are times when you have to preach intolerance, when you have to say you have the right to say this is a load of garbage. You have that right. Everyone has that right, and to have that taken away from us is really scary.
But you think about it, back in the late 50s, when they tried to ban Tom Sawyer and other books like that, you know, they're going to try to do this to this book. You know, they try to do that to pornography. They try to do that to everything. But, hey.
Uh-huh.
I believe that, like we say, we have freedom of, press, religion, and everything. That's what makes this country great, if you really believe it. Because if other people, if they really have any education at all, they could say, hey, I respect that. People make their own statements in different ways,
That's right.
And this guy who I don't even have his name, with saying the guy who wrote the Satanic book.
What is it? Let's see. I keep forgetting it myself. Salman Rushdie.
Yeah, I respect him. I think whatever what he's wrote in the book and what Ayatollah is getting so upset about, maybe the truth really hurts. You know, along that idea.
Maybe they don't even know what it was he said, but they just think that what he says represents something that they really are opposed to. Most people have not read this book, and I don't know if you saw the quotes a few days ago in newspapers, that he was saying the book they're criticizing is not the book I wrote. And if they would sit down and read this book, they would see that it's not really that that critical at all, and they're misinterpreting the whole thing.
Maybe this book, because until I'll be able to get it, I don't know when that will be. You know, until these stores, you know, get some nerve and start putting these on the shelf.
Yeah, I mean, if everybody put it on the shelves, what would they do? You know, what could they do?
There's nothing that anybody else could do. Hey, you'll have a couple of scares here and there, but hey, we have to rely on our government. Like our police force, our local police, 6th Precinct, 4th Precinct, 5th Precinct, you know, to protect us. You know, hey, these guys that go out, drink and drive, hey, they have to realize that they're screwing up.
Right.
And we're not, you know, listen, that's how everybody has this idea of calling cops pigs and this and that. We have to rely on them to take care of us, too.
Sure, but we have to rely on all of all the people of society to keep an eye out for violations of things like the First Amendment.
But that's when it comes to other people are very corrupt and they don't give a damn on who they're screwing over and what goes on.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Well, that's why it's important to keep one thing in mind, that there are no exceptions to something like this. No exceptions at all.
This is very true. I want to say something. This is the first time I'm actually listening to your show. I used to listen to from A to Z rock and roll, back when I lived in Center Reach. That was a while back, like, let me say like 5 years ago.
From A to Z?
Yeah, A to Z. They used to play from Aerosmith to Zeppelin or something like that.
On this station?
Yeah.
Really? I don't remember that, but...
From like 3 o'clock. It was like 3 o'clock. 3 o'clock in the afternoon to about 5 or so.
Really? Okay.
It was a while ago. But let me tell you something. I just turned on this radio station, and I was like, you know, I really respect you for the show Brain Damage, you know?
Oh,
I really do.
That's good to hear.
Because, hey, you know, with people like you to give controversial issues and have enough nerve to go out and say what you're saying is showing to say that you're caring about what is said instead of just looking at the newspaper, you know, and throwing it aside.
Yeah.
Saying, hey, this is news.
I'll tell you something, though. When you start getting involved, when you start talking about these issues, they become more interesting because there's so much more to learn. It's a road that you just never stop traveling on. There's so much to read and take in and argue about. And it's, there is no real issue that's apart from that.
I understand it.
Get involved and talk these things over with people because that's how you grow, you know?
This is true. And, you know, people, that's, you know what it is? I feel that people, the first step is the hardest.
Oh, definitely, with anything.
Because they, you know, like they, you know, the old expression, the first step's a doozy, you know what I mean?
Uh-huh. I never heard that expression, but it sounds like a
that,
good old
that came from Bugs Bunny.
Did it really?
Yes.
Well, Bugs Bunny is somebody I really respect. And I do, because he's an individual, and he's a bit of an anarchist, but he's mostly an individual.
Hmm? Yeah, I can go along with that.
Yeah.
But seriously, I like the show from what I heard tonight, and you know I hear you're from Stony Brook. I live in Pokot.
Uh-huh.
You know where that is?
Yes, I do.
Oh, great!
Nice little what they call that, a hamlet, or something like that on the North Shore between Setauket and Port Jefferson.
Yes, this is true.
Yeah.
What happens is this in this area here. I'm not going to mention my last name, but
you're not the mayor of Pokot, are you?
No, the mayor of Pokot, Otto. Forget about it. He's an uneducated...
Otto?
Yes, Otto.
Well, Otto could be listening.
Oh, Seberg.
But you know, the whole point of this is that the mayor of Pokot or the Ayatollah Khomeini are not above criticism on this or any other radio program, as far as I'm concerned. So say what you have to about Otto. He's a public person. Go ahead.
Oh, what's his name? He's he's very uneducated because there was a story in Newsday about a while back, let me say during the summer in August. And he was mentioning all kinds of stuff about because I had some problems with our neighbor that used to live across the street, and what happens is that we had an easement on the property, this and, you know, where that we can come and forth as we please. We can unload, you know, bring packages into the house and, you know, move the car afterwards. And since we were newcomers and this guy was on the board of trustees, they gave him all kinds of the rights and stuff like that. But legally, we had more rights, and this went on for 7 years that we were living here. And these people, to be quite honest, they're backwards, they're closed-minded individuals. And I, you know, I believe that the town of Brookhaven should take, if any of the town, anybody from the town listens to me, or from Pokot itself, listens to the station, I believe that the town should take over, which means overthrow the incorporated village, because between you and I, we're paying more taxes. You see, we pay, we're paying one tax to, Brookhaven, then we pay another tax to Pokot.
To the incorporated village.
Yes, and they are not supplying us with the roads being plowed. They're not doing. They're not. Be quite honest. They're not doing squat.
Uh-huh.
They don't. They say no soliciting, no parking on the streets. Basically no breathing, no anything. You know.
Uh-huh.
With the unrestricted pets, this and that. They don't enforce their laws.
Uh-huh.
And that's quite hypocritical. That's what I've been trying to understand about the rest of society. They say things, and what happens is, they don't practice what they preach. You know?
Yeah, that's dissent in Pokot. That's quite shocking. Do many people feel this way over there? Or are there many people over there to start with?
Well, I don't think that many of the people over here can really hear. The population over here is 65%. 85 and over.
85 and over?
Yeah, about
that. Doesn't mean they can't hear.
Well, you know what I mean. They're not changeable in their ways.
Uh-huh.
And they're not open for change. They're very conservative.
Oh, I don't know, you know, how it would be at the age of 85. That's just it. No one really knows what it's like to be 85 because, you know, the only people you ever talk to who are 85 are outside of the mainstream society.
This is true.
Now, you name me a mainstream society where people who are 85 are at the center of it, besides the White House, maybe. You know, you'll have a better sense of what it's like to be old, but that's something that we don't know anything about. You know, it's kind of scary because, you know, hopefully someday we'll be that old and, you know, we'll feel like outcasts and we won't be able to communicate how we're feeling.
Yeah.
You know? Think about it in that way. Think about these poor old folks who live in your neighborhood that are like feel completely isolated and apart from everything else. And they may not feel that way. I don't know. You know, I don't know Pokot that well. But there's all kinds of ways of looking at something like this.
This is true.
But, you know, don't get too caught up in it because it sounds like a mess.
You know?
Yeah.
That's why I feel that everybody should get this book. That the newspaper Newsday and everybody is talking about and should read it and make their own interpretations.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, if they're going to ban this book, we're saying, what's going to happen? You know? What are they going to ban next? Nice night.
You too. Thanks for calling.
Okay. Thank you, Bob.
632-6901. Is anything above criticism? I don't know. It's a touchy issue these days. 632-6901. Good evening. You're on Brain Damage.
Oh, yeah. Bill Fox is a dick.
Good evening. You're on Brain Damage.
Hello?
Yes?
Oh, hi.
Hi.
Yeah, I wanted to talk about that. I brought up a good point. I mean, you did, about the old people.
Yeah.
I feel that, over here in this country, there's really a tremendous lack of respect, maybe, I'm not sure how to put it, but it's like being old is a terrible thing, and everybody just wants to forget about all these old people and just, you know, shove them under the rug, so to speak. You know, it's not like, you know, a lot of other places in the world. You know, the older you are, you know, you're a respected, you know, member of the community. Like over here, you know, nobody cares. You know, a lot of these old people, you know, they can't live off Social Security and all.
What do you mean over here? Is there a particular town?
No, in the United States.
Oh, okay.
you know, it's hard on an old person, you know.
Sure, but you see, the only people that can say that are young people because, you know, the old people don't get on TV. They don't, they're not reporters. They're not in the mainstream.
Yeah, well, they do have a thing called the Gray Panthers. It's sort of like a senior citizen.
Right, but that only gets coverage if the young media chooses to cover it, you
yeah,
see.
It is true, but I really think that, it, you know, it's a terrible shame that anybody should, you know, have to work hard all their life, you know, maybe they fought for this country in the Second World or whatever, and here they are, you know, living on a pitiful pension and, you know, some, you know, they can't hack it. You know, it just doesn't seem fair, you know.
No, certainly so, doesn't. But
I mean,
you know,
the last years of your life, you should be able not to have to worry about these things anymore. You know, it's really a strange thing, like some of the things that are valued over here, you know.
Uh-huh. Well, it sounds reasonable, you know. People should not have to, you know, at any age, really, you shouldn't have to worry about the mundane things for too much of their time.
No, it's, you know, it's true, but, you know, it's, you know, some things are really strange. Like, no, it is, over here, you know, it's like, you know, they may say in all the books that Christianity is the religion of America, but what I feel is materialism is the religion of this country. It's the driving force. It's what's aimed at in everything, you know. You can ask anybody, you know, especially like, you know, say people entering college now, say, what do you want to do with your life? And they say, I want to make lots and lots of money, you know.
Right.
And I was reading something that, like, you know, 20 years ago or so, things were different. People would say, oh, I wanted to, you know, look for, you know, greater peace of mind or, you know, find something, you know, different, a little along a more spiritual line.
Yeah, and I think if you check in on these folks in 20 years, the ones that want to make lots of money, they may have made lots of money, but they may also have a lot of problems, you know.
Well, you know, like I said, it's a hollow thing, you know. Money is, you know, I mean, you need it, you have to have it, and it's good to have, you know, it's good to have a good amount of it. You know, I'm not a fool. I would, you know, I live comfortably, you know, and I can't say that I want to live uncomfortably, but... You know, I mean, you know, there's a limit to how much, you know, I feel that, you know, you should have.
Right, well, if you become obsessed with it, it loses its joy, like any obsession.
Yeah, right, I mean, it's good to have the nice things in life, exactly, and, you know, you know, if you work for it, you know, you deserve what you get, but, you know, like, over here, it seems like, you know, especially so many people I know, it's just so obsessed, you know, they think, you know, that, you know, the best thing in life is to drive a BMW and... You know, eat brie every day, and that's, you know, that's what makes you a good person.
Well, apart from, you know, from being obsessed with that, it puts you at such a distance with the rest of the world that, you know, you can't even feel like you're living on the same planet with most of the world if you have that kind of attitude towards things.
It's true, you know, like some people I know that I went to high school with, they just, you know, over time they got this attitude like that. It's
right. Now, you know, can somebody who drives, who has to drive a BMW every day, can they walk through the streets of Bombay and feel anything but disgust?
Well, it depends.
You know?
Well, you know,
I mean, if you can walk through the streets of Bombay and feel a certain kind of unity somewhere,
well,
then you're a human being, you know?
Yeah, you don't even have to go that far, really. But,
it's not that far. It's a basic place, you know. It's like any place in the world. But most people would recoil in horror because it's not the kind
terrible
of life
thing
they expect, but it's reality.
I agree with you, but you know, I really think that you know, a lot of you know, things that are happening in our culture, you know, in our ways, really should be, you know, we should all take a hard look at things and think about what's truly important, you know. We're talking about people here, you know. You know, another thing that gets lost is, like, young children are getting, you know, terribly, you know, abused these days. You see it more and more, you know. You know, kids running away and, you know, come from a bad home, you know, all kinds of stuff. So many kids are born in poverty in this country. It's really, you know, and when you think about it, the children are our future, you know. I mean, you know, 20 years from now, just say, you know, if it gets to a point where half the children in this country are born into poverty, that whole environment is going to, you know, chances are you're not going to make it, it seems, these days. You know, it's really hard to pull yourself out of that.
What do you think of this kinder, gentler nation business?
Well, you know, I'm not much into politics. I'm really disappointed with both the parties, to tell you the truth.
Uh-huh. Well, you see, it's not
No,
politics.
I don't see it happening. That's rhetoric. It's pure rhetoric.
You know, it's, you know, you hear that kind of stuff all the time. What are they going to do? You know, there's no money for it. They're not going to raise taxes, which is another thing. They say, you know, these people are the people hard on crime. The only way to get rid of crime is to raise taxes and build more prisons and keep these people who are sentenced for 20 to life in there for 20 to life instead of 6 years.
Yeah, but
have to do something about that.
But wait a minute, why is there suddenly a need for so many more prisons?
Well,
why is there more crime?
It's because I really don't know why. Well, you know what it is? It's demographic. You see, it's like. Well, like there was a boom with, you know, children after the war years and all that, and that continued through the 60s. Well, that's where, like, where most of the criminals are between the ages, career criminals are between the ages of, say, 20 and, you know, 40. And that's, you know, and it's like the same people who are committing almost, like, half the crimes in this country are committed by the same, you know, 50, 60,000, you know, career criminals, true recidivists. And the thing being that there's no space, you know, when these people say they're sentenced to 20 years for a murder, there's no room for them. And if they're not a big famous case or something, the average sentence of a 20 to life sentence is 8 years for murdering somebody. That means somebody could come in and murder you right now, you know, just say, or me even, you know, rob us, murder us, and they'll be out of jail in 8 years. That's the national average. I think that's a terrible shame. That, you know, I mean, these people are being let out. People who, I mean, have, you know, virtually no chance of ever being rehabilitated.
Right. Well, I mean, I'm not suggesting that these people should be walking around the streets. I'm just wondering why there seem to be so many people that have to go to jail. I mean, something must be.
There's a tremendous amount of crime here.
Yeah, but why?
Why? Probably it has something to do with there's a lot of poverty. But even,
poverty breeds crime is what you're saying.
Somewhat, but even so, our murder statistics are vastly higher than, say, a country like India or even a relatively poor country like Greece.
Do you think the prevalence of guns has something to do with that?
Guns would have something to do with it. Oh, I'm sure, but that's a lot of people get murdered. But even if people weren't getting murdered with guns, the same people would rob you with something else. You know what I'm saying? I mean, the gunshot murders would go down if there were no guns.
That's true, but it's kind of hard to fling a knife across a room at somebody, you know.
But they would rob you some other way. I really, and then another thing, they would always get into this country, too. There's a market for guns here. Somebody's going to bring it into this country. It's like the coke. You can't stop the coke. It's going
to
come in.
Yeah, but that's not an excuse to make it legal, is it?
No, but, well, I can't say that. I don't think pistols should be legal.
I mean, people say, you know, if you outlaw guns, guns will only be in the hands of criminals. Okay, fine. I mean, that's great. Then everyone who has a gun is that. All right, police and criminals would then have guns. I think that takes away a good percentage of the potential problems. Then, if only criminals have guns, you see someone with a gun, you know they're either a criminal or a cop, you know, and you can ask them even on the street, which are you, and they'll tell you, and you'll know.
Right. that would be part of the problem.
Because there's a lot of people that aren't criminals, you know, and they have guns, and that's what worries me.
Guns should be totally outlawed, that nobody can have a gun for any reason. I don't think.
Imagine, you know, somebody shoots their friend while showing them, you know, saying, hey, Freddie, look down the barrel of my gun, I'm going to show you how I clean it, and bang, it goes off. That person is a criminal because he has a gun, you see?
But I don't think that gun possession should be totally banned. I don't think that would really solve anything. You know, say long guns as opposed to pistols.
Well,
you know, the sportsmen
the sportsman things, yeah, there's an argument there.
But
as far as for protection, I just haven't seen enough evidence to prove that guns really protect you when they're hidden in some part of your house.
Oh no, I'm not going to argue that point. As you know, a gun is not. Chances are, the gun isn't going to help you. If you're going to get burglarized, you're not home to shoot the criminal.
Right.
And if you're going to get mugged, you're going to get jumped, you know.
Right.
And chances are the gun wouldn't do you any good. And, you know, you can't, I mean, that's a matter for the police, you know. But
right.
what I want to say is that it's a terrible shame that people are afraid that they think they have to carry guns to be protected, you know, in the city, you know. I know black people who you know, who moved out to the island, you know, they're afraid to go into Harlem and stuff like that. You know, that's real hardcore. You know, I mean, real, there's a lot of terrible people, you know, not just there, all over the place, you know. They really, you know, I mean, I'm, you know, definitely handguns won't solve anything. It would be good if they could be rolled back. and, you know, we could grab them all. But before that could happen, it would you'd definitely have to make the streets a lot safer before people would acquiesce to, you know, a total ban on handguns, especially in New York.
Uh-huh.
But you do have, you know, I don't favor totally outlawing all guns, but pistols, you know, a pistol is only good for killing someone.
Right. That's the only reason they're there.
You know, as for like target pistols, there are specifically made target pistols. They're single shot, bolt action jobs, you know.
Uh-huh.
So they're not. It's not like something a criminal would really want to
use. Plus, it just keeps getting worse. You know, they introduced the Teflon bullets and
I think they
things
banned
that pierce
them.
Through. Yeah, they banned them.
Banned them, and they banned automatic weapons.
The NRA did not want to ban them, and nobody could figure out why. You know, what is the point of having a gun that can pierce a bulletproof vest? You know, what is the point? There's no animal that wears a bulletproof vest, only cops.
It's their reason. It's a domino theory of sorts, where if they lose ground one way, they're going to lose it all.
Uh-huh.
They fight everything. That's their whole strategy. They're really a strange lot, the NRA.
They certainly are.
They have a terrible amount of support. You know, it's really something.
Uh-huh.
Do you ever read that, you know, the magazines, the gun magazines and all?
I've seen them. I've never actually picked them up.
There's one where they list how everyone votes on gun laws.
Uh-huh. Well, it would be nice if the anti-gun lobby could do the same thing and
anti-gun
be as vocal.
They're nothing in the face of this, though, because it's like, you know, it's got everybody listed, you know, from, you know, in Congress and how they voted on gun laws.
Right, but it's only because they're loud. You see, the same thing happened with the beverage industry when they wanted to stop the bottle bill from taking effect in Suffolk County. They sent people down to the county legislature and made it seem like there were hundreds of people opposed to the bottle bill, when in actuality they were all hired by the beverage industry. They were loud and aggressive, and they created a false impression. And I think the NRA has done the same thing.
I think they do have a lot more support than, say, those guys would. I think that if you did...
Well, only,
you know,
because it's a national issue.
Right. Exactly. It's a big national issue, and there are probably more people in favor of the present gun laws than there are people who would want to, say, repeal handgun ownership.
Right, because it's been made into a conservative issue.
Right. Exactly.
When it gets divorced from that particular area of politics, maybe we'll see some progress.
But, like I said, they really should... They've really got to make the streets safe. You know, all these neighborhoods are being ruined by this crack and all the other drugs and all the, you know, it's horrible. It's really terrible. You can't raise a child in these places.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean?
It's got to be addressed.
Something.
The problem has to be addressed directly. We have to have a president that will address it using the words. We have to have a president who isn't afraid to say the word AIDS. When somebody is direct and open about the problems facing us, racism, crack, AIDS, all that kind of thing,
but you
might see some progress then.
But the thing that they have to do something. They have to hire more cops or something. And the only way that's going to come about is if taxes get raised.
Uh-huh.
You know, everybody wants to whine and say, oh, my taxes, you know. In a lot of places, you know, maybe taxes are high already, but... You know, it's a big mess, and it's got to be cleaned up sometime.
Okay, I'm going to go to some more calls then.
All right, it's good.
Thanks for calling.
To you.
Oh, cool.
Good evening, you're on... Oh, you sound silly, so I'm going to hang up on you. Good evening, you're on Brain Damage.
Hi, how you doing?
Okay.
Okay, getting back to that Rushdie guy, the guy that wrote the Satanic Verses.
Yeah?
I want to know, what I'd like to know is why countries are so afraid to, like, speak out against Khomeini's death threat.
Well, because he's proven his death threats carry weight, you see?
That's why the country should get down on him, though. Like, they should speak out against him, because he's hated by capitalists and communists alike. And if the world leaders would just get up and say something, I don't think that he might have the power to, but I don't think he'd be stupid enough to go out and actually kill people from all countries all over the world.
I don't think so either. Even Gaddafi, you know, he makes all these threats.
Yeah.
And he says, you know, we're going to fight to the death with the United States, but they never actually come about, and the terrorist incidents that happen seem to be more isolated instances of factions of particular groups.
Yeah, you notice that. It's always a faction of a group. It's never the group itself that does anything.
Uh-huh. These people aren't really insane. They just have a completely different conception of how to view certain parts, you know, like religion and things like that. They take it very seriously. I don't think every one of their threats should be taken as if it's God himself making the threat. you know?
But I think they're doing the same thing to the book as the people did to Last Temptation of Christ, where they make a big deal about it. People wouldn't actually go out and buy the book and read it if there wasn't such a controversy about it.
Right, but the difference is, we knew that the people protesting The Last Temptation of Christ were simply voicing their opinions, and that there was really nothing they could do to stop it. This is something we somehow think that that these folks can do something about it, and we're scared of them. And that's got to stop. You know, we can't live our lives in fear. We're not doing anything aggressive. We're not bombing villages here. We're simply reading a book.
Right.
That's the difference.
Right, because, I mean, maybe it does insult religion, but there's, like you said before, there's a lot of people that are insulted by a lot of things that go on all over the world.
Right, every religion insults people, you know? I mean, there's not a single religion that exists today that doesn't really upset somebody. Now, does that person have the right to go into a mosque and start shooting?
Right,
you know?
I mean, why don't people make death threats against Satan worshippers or someone who's considered evil by another? Like, you don't see Christians getting up and, or the Pope getting up and making death threats to Satan worshippers.
No, that's got to stop. That kind of religion where all other religions are evil and they're all going to hell, that's, we're past that, I think. And I think, you know, the Muslims are past that, too. I don't think their religion is any worse than anyone else's, but I think they have to play by the same rules in the global community.
Right.
Thanks for calling.
Okay.
632-6901. Now, before we go to our next call, and we'll go to it in just a moment, let's just give another check to good old David Duke down in New Orleans, the Klansman that just got elected to the state legislature. See if he's off his phone yet, and if he is, ask him just what the hell he thinks he's doing. Oh, well, I guess he's on the phone for the night. Well, people are calling to congratulate him or curse him out or whatever. In case you don't know what I'm talking about, let's see if I can find the bulletin that we got before. Yes, here it is. David Duke, a former Ku Klux Klansman, actually a former Ku Klux Klan grand. Does anyone have trouble saying Ku Klux Klan? I do. Why did I come up with a name like that in the first place? Former Triple K Grand Wizard. How's that? Anyway, this guy, David Duke, squeaked out a narrow victory over home builder John Treen tonight in a race for a seat in the Louisiana legislature after a campaign peppered with charges of racism. And I imagine when you're the former Grand Wizard of the Klan, some troublemaker is bound to stand up and accuse you of being a racist. Unofficial returns show 35 of 35 precincts reporting. Duke had 8,456 votes. Treen had 8,232. And if I could do some quick calculations here, that's 234 votes that got him in. No, I'm sorry, 224 votes that got David Duke elected. Scary. We'll see what that leads to. Oh, and on the subject of Nazis and Klansmen, I was going through Time magazine, and White Ring, I guess it's a Freudian slip, right-wing groups in West Germany have grown increasingly visible recently, but authorities last week drew the line at just how far such movements may go. Bonn, which is the capital of West Germany, banned the 170-member neo-Nazi National Assembly political group, confiscating ammunition, knives, and swastikas during nationwide raids on offices and members' apartments. This strike against neo-Nazis should be seen as an unmistakable warning signal, said Interior Minister Friedrich Zimmermann. West Germany will not be a playing field for right-wing extremism. The raids came only 10 days after the new right party, the Republicans, won a startling 7.5% of the vote in West Berlin city elections. Zimmermann said the ban on the National Assembly did not affect the Republican Party because it is not considered extremist. As for the National Assembly group, leader Michael Kunin, who remained free despite the ban, announced the formation of a new neo-Nazi party. God bless him. And what else have we got here? One more story, one more quickie before we go back to the phones. This kid in New Jersey, I don't know if you heard about him. It's also from Time magazine. They say a little learning is a dangerous thing. Ask Todd Patterson. He just had just finished the sixth grade in Franklin Lakes, New Jersey, when he began compiling his own encyclopedia of all the nations of the world. All of them. He wrote to embassies, including the Soviet Union's, for information. Enter the FBI, which began investigating the boy and kept at it until it had built up a 17-page file. Now an 18-year-old high school senior, Patterson brought suit in May against the FBI to get access to the files. Last week, a federal judge threw out the suit. After reviewing FBI documents that Patterson's lawyers were not allowed to see, U.S. District Judge Alfred M. Wolin decided the Bureau had acted in the interest of national security. The judge added that he hoped the FBI would expunge Patterson's file, as it has offered to do, but Patterson's parents object that the Bureau might start a new one. Todd is still writing to foreign governments, says his father. Maybe Todd should have collected baseball cards. Imagine that. All he did was write to the Soviet Union. Write to the embassy. I mean, look what we're doing.
What's the background to the song Moscow Nights? It's the tune Mr. and Mrs. Gorbachev sang along when Van Cliver...
We're airing programs that come straight from Radio Moscow.
...during the summit. Why is it so loved by the citizens of your nation?
Well, I think it's loved...
Can you imagine that? Can you imagine how much trouble we're in now? Oh, boy. All he did was write to them. I don't know. There's a lot of strange things going on in the world. A lot of strange things. You got to keep your eyes on the papers, on the magazines, and things like that. But right now, just look at the telephone dial and punch in this sequence 632-6901. And you'll be connected to Brain Damage. Good evening, you're on Brain Damage.
You, Cop.
Good evening, you're on Brain Damage.
Hi.
Hi.
How are you?
Okay, how are you?
Hey, I'm pretty good. What's your name?
My name's Eric.
Hi, Eric. How are you?
Okay, how are you?
Okay. I was listening to about what you were talking about before to that the two last guys you were talking about.
Uh-huh.
About all the killers and everything, and that something should be done.
Yeah.
Well, I think there should be like a federal that there should be. I mean, just kill all of them. I'm sorry.
kill all of who?
All the criminals. I mean, having anything. If anyone does anything that actually, see, if a criminal actually kills someone or has something, does like something to jeopardize their life, then they should get the same thing done back to them.
Okay, but you see, my view on this is, you're killing somebody because you think they deserve to die, right?
Well, no one. Well, they didn't have a right to kill anyone else. You know what I mean? That's not right. I mean, something.
But they, you see, they think they did, for whatever twisted reason, they think that the person they killed deserved to die. And it just doesn't strike me that we're much better if we do use the same kind of logic and just say, well, because it's the law, we can do it. You know, it's, and also, if you go around killing lots of people for all kinds of crimes, you are going to start killing innocent people, you know, not intentionally, but it is going to happen. At least there's a chance that justice will prevail if somebody is still alive. There is a chance that somebody will see the light. I mean, I feel bad condoning keeping horrible people living and breathing and that kind of thing, but I just don't see as if we have a choice, you know?
Well, no, I think that, and I think it could be like used as a threat, you know, because I mean, if there's a threat in it, I mean, it seems like, you know, prison terms is not a good enough threat.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean? They have to make a harsher threat. I mean, you know, even life in jail doesn't even seem to faze them, doesn't stop them. I mean, what is there to do to stop them? I can't think of anything else.
Uh-huh.
Because, I mean, no one wants to die unless, it's, you know, they want to, but most people don't want to. Even if they go killing off other people, they don't want to. So maybe to use it as a threat and maybe set an example or something, you know, a more widely known example, instead of just a few states that do have the death penalty, you know?
I don't know. Just, you know, do you think it's doing any good, the states that are killing criminals? Do you think they have a lower crime rate?
No. Yeah, you're right. But, I mean, I just can't think of anything. What else could they do? What else?
Well, look at what happened when Bundy was executed a few weeks ago. There were, you know, there are parties outside where he got executed. I just don't see how that is a constructive atmosphere where people are celebrating someone being executed.
Wasn't right, yeah. That really wasn't.
But you see, it's what it leads to. It leads to this sick kind of way of looking at things.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, the guy was a horrible person. And no one's denying that, but it's just, it can lead to worse things, you know?
Yeah, definitely. I don't know, but I know, it's like I just came out, you know, from being out all night, and I just saw, like, this guy who, like, really freaks me out. I mean, he's been, like, in all the high schools, and I remember his name, but, like, my one of my coaches, like, knew him from when he was in high school, and he says, oh, this guy went to this high school and that high school, and they're like things I've heard that he's, you know, that this guy has done that were like really mega bad, and he's out. I mean, I was driving and I see him walking the streets, you know,
that is scary.
A stoplight, and I'm like, you know, I said to my friend, I said, lock the doors, you know, because I know what, because, and they're all people like that walking around.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there's nothing to keep them in. You know, I mean, it's scary. I mean, my mom doesn't even want me to go, you know, like, I can understand and I agree with her. You know, when I go to the mall, you know, park next to, like, you know, an entrance, you know, don't go all the way off, you know, and I don't know, it's just really scary. Because now you have to, you know, be worried about things like that. I mean, when I go out at night, I look, you know, like, even though I lock my doors, I just look in the back seat and in the trunk to make sure that, like, no one got in, you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I can understand that. A lot of people have no conception of what it's like to have to worry about those kind of things.
Sad that you have to.
It is. I don't have any answers. It's a tough world, and something's definitely wrong with it. I can't place my finger on it, but...
And it seems like nothing is stopping it, you know what I mean? It just keeps on getting worse and worse, and it keeps on spreading from the bad neighborhoods into the good neighborhoods. I mean, it's like there's nowhere you can escape from it. It's, you know, there's no, like, good, quote-unquote, good neighborhoods, you know, because, you know, like, almost, you know, like, at least a few times a year, you know, that this is a nice neighborhood or a nice town, and all of a sudden this tragic thing happened, and they're all shook up, you know, and all of a sudden it's not such a good town or a good neighborhood anymore.
Right, how could something like this happen in our own backyards? Same old speech.
And then everyone's freaked out about it.
Uh-huh. Well, you know, like I said, I don't have any answers. Perhaps just, realize that those kind of things are always a possibility. Keep your guard up and try not to let it interfere with who you are.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah, because my mom always told me, like she has a younger brother who's like 2 years younger than her, but like when she was, you know, when they were little, she used to tell me that her mom used to like go shopping, you know, in the supermarket, and she would leave my mom and her brother outside until she was finished shopping, and like nothing was thought about. I mean, it's like everyone did that. And
yeah.
Now you can't do that at all. Just can't do that. You know, my mom my mom was like 10 years old or something. She would watch her brother. And like, you know, my grandma didn't think anything twice. Now you can't do that. You can't even leave a little kid locked in the car. You know, and just run into a 7-Eleven and get something. You can't even do that.
Well, you know, it's always been a little dangerous. I don't know if you can say you can't do that. Maybe in certain parts of the world you can't. But, I mean, I'm not in the habit of locking kids in cars and running to 7-Eleven, but I don't think I would feel as if something horrible was going to happen if I did that.
Mm-hmm.
Especially if I locked the door and took the keys, too.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It's, you know, I'm not saying these dangers aren't real. They are real, but it's how we think about them.
Mm-hmm.
That determine how much they affect our lives and how much they make us slaves, you know?
You're right, and that's sick.
Well... You brought up some good points. Unfortunately, we're at the end of our time.
Okay.
Thanks for calling. Where are you calling from?
Calling from Selden.
Selden, okay.
I'm the one that me and my friend called, and we talked about the chemistry and the track and everything.
Oh, yeah, a few weeks ago, right?
Yeah, tomorrow's the All Suffolk County meet.
Oh, well, good luck in that. You're participating, I assume.
Definitely.
Okay, well, let us know next week how you did.
Okay.
All right.
Okay,
well,
thanks a lot.
Watching. Take care.
Okay, bye-bye.
And that is our show for this week. At least I think it's our show. I don't know who's supposed to be here for 12 o'clock. What's that? I hear... Maybe somebody's at the door. I'm not sure. I hear strange noises. I'm going to go check and see if someone's at the door or in the back in the library or something like that. In the meantime, folks, this has been Brain Damage. Eric Corley with you. We'll be back again next week from 10 to 12 and talking about all kinds of fun things. Remember to keep finding out what's going on in the world, pay attention and all that kind of thing, and all the other bits of advice I can leave you with. Let's leave off with still more of this steel drum music. We've heard just about the whole album here. Our Boys Steel Drum Orchestra. Great stuff. We'll see you next week. Good night. If you're a USB listener, you may find yourself involved in a conversation like this.
Hi, honey. I'm home.
Boy, am I glad to see you. Look what we got in the mail today.
Oh, the new USB program guide?
No, it's a special USB radiothon guide.
Radiothon? What's a radiothon?
It's 8 days of special programming starting March 18th. Look at what they're doing.
Wow, jazz, reggae, blues, folk.
Not only that, special shows with Helen Caldicott, Abby Hoffman, Martin Luther King.
Look at this, a rebroadcast of the Grateful Dead playing Stony Brook in 1970.
I tried to call you at work, but you had already left.
What's the purpose of this radiothon?
Well, that's what I wanted to talk to you about. WUSB needs a new transmitter, and the only way they can possibly get one is if the listeners pitch in.
Well, why don't they just sell some commercials? That's how all the other stations make money.
Yeah, but USB isn't like those other stations. They're not allowed to have commercials, and I'm glad, because if they had commercials, they'd have to stop being so...
different?
Yeah, that's it. And by showing our support, we'll be helping to make USB a better station, and get this, if they raise enough money, they'll be able to start making the signal stronger.
You mean I'll be able to get WUSB at the office, too?
It's worth thinking about, isn't it?
Yeah. You know, we could really make a difference. And just look at what we get in return. Honey, get the checkbook.
I have it right here, dear.
Yes, you can be just like this happy couple and help out Long Island's first station of the 90s. WUSB needs a new transmitter, and we need your help. Radiothon 89 begins on Saturday, March 18th. If you'd like more information, call 632-6498.
Hi, this is Greg Lake on WUSB Stony Brook, and I believe in Father Christmas.
Consolation, 'cause you took away all my will to live. Don't you know I just died a little each day ever since you've been gone away? Baby, won't you please, oh please, come back home? Oh, each day seems like a light. Baby, and don't let my